Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
Happy Tuesday, NBA world. We are back with another episode of the Pull Up Podcast, hosted by Jacob Noble. Today, we have none other than Sean Hykin from Bleacher Report, from NBC's Basketball Talk, and previously everywhere else in the world. But he is currently located out in Chicago, covering the Bulls for Bleacher Report. How are we doing today, Sean?
I'm good, Jacob. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you. You're one of my favorite Twitter handlers to follow, and to follow him, it's at Hykin. Pretty easy to spell there. I don't know how you lucked out on that easy Twitter handle, but congratulations to you. I actually had to
pull some strings to get it, believe it or not. When I was at USA Today, I had to get their social media director to talk to Twitter because somebody had it that was
a Twitter egg.
Right, it was an egg. It was one of those accounts that had, like, one follower and had one tweet from, like, 4 years ago, but I couldn't get it. So I had to actually have the USA Today social media editor pull some strings to get it for me. So that's
how I got it.
It's
like those scumbags who go out there and got the McDonald's Twitter handle or got the Kanye Twitter handle because they know those people are going to pay them a couple grand for that Twitter handle. And that's actually how – I'll have to tell you a story off air. That's actually – I got kind of screwed by NBC for my previous blog, the Pro Basketball Talk. But that's another story for another day. We're here to talk about playoff basketball, which is heating up. We have three series that are now in a best of three, the best way to have a series. And we have one series that's kind of getting out of hand for one team here. But let's start with the series that's going on tonight, Game 5. Best of three series. Chicago Bulls are going to be taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers in Cleveland and going against a LeBron James in a best-of-three situation, which is a nightmare for any opponent. First question off the bat for you, Sean. Now that it is a best-of-three, do you still think the Chicago Bulls have a chance to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in this series?
Absolutely. I think, really, this series has been so, been back and forth so far. I mean, I know the Cavs, won a game in Chicago, and you would think that kind of means, okay, they have all the momentum now. But really, nothing is going to surprise me with the way this series has gone. Just the last two games in Chicago, which I was at both, and they've been so weird, and it's just so much kind of weird stuff has happened for it to get to where it is. The other thing is, the Cavs are just not healthy right now. I mean, besides the obvious part about Kevin Love being out the entire playoffs, you saw the way Kyrie Irving looked in Game 4. He looked terrible. He looked playing on one foot, and then it comes out the next day and he has a right foot strain and left knee tendonitis, so I don't know how effective you can expect him to be. And so now you're kind of, without Love and without Irving, being effective, you basically are looking at kind of what the Cavs were like before LeBron went to Miami in 2010, where he kind of has to beat teams by himself every night. And it's certainly possible that he does that because he's LeBron James, he's the best player in the world, but I don't think it's a done deal by any means that the Cavs are going to win this series.
You mentioned Kyrie Irving, and this is interesting because I know everyone likes to hammer him for his assists, and I understand he's hurt. But for me, using my brain that I have, if I'm hurt, my scoring is going down. That's a given. I'm not going to complain about his, his shooting woes and his inability to basically just attack the rim like a force of nature that he is. But shouldn't your passing increase, or shouldn't you, at least get a few assists? I know he's gotten two games in a row with donuts in the assist column, and the internet was blessed with that famous question and the reaction of Kyrie at the press conference. But in your opinion, do you think he should be looking to pass more, that he is hurt and limited physically in this series?
It's not that he's not passing. It's that you get an assist when you pass somebody, they make a shot. According to some of that SportView data, he had in the game where he got that question about having zero assists, he had five assist chances where he would have had an assist if the person he passed to had made the shot. So it's not like he's not passing the ball. I think there are a lot of reasons that the Cavs are where they are in this series, but I don't think Kyrie Irving not having enough assists is really one of them.
Let's jump to the other side of the offensive table here for the Chicago Bulls, a team where when they're rolling, when Rose is knocking down shots, Butler's knocking down shots, they look like a nice, potent offense. And then they get stretches where, I think it was in the second quarter of Game 4 there, where Cleveland just went on a 16-0 run. There was nine minutes in that second quarter where the Bulls just could not score. How do you fix these woes? And do you think it's a systematic thing, or do you just think that, the Bulls aren't known for their offense?
I think this is just kind of what they are. It really just depends on who's making shots. Yeah, you have to remember in the game three, Nikola Mirotic had a huge impact on the offensive end, and then in the game four, he went down. He went 1 for 9. He didn't shoot well at all. You know, Taj Gibson didn't shoot well. Basically, Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler have been their only consistent offensive players in this series. And then, you know, Pau Gasol has been ineffective in the first two games. He was great in the first game of the series. He was ineffective the next two, and then he missed the last game because he got hurt. We still don't know if he's playing tonight, but having another low-post scorer like that would certainly help them. So, I don't know. I think the Bulls have been just an inconsistent offensive team all year. So, you know, this is kind of what they are. Sometimes they're going to have nights where they make shots, and sometimes they're not.
Let's jump back to the Cleveland Cavaliers here for a moment, because there's one player who I think has been the most consistent on this team, and that's including LeBron James in this group, and that's Tristan Thompson. For what he is and what he's expected to do, I think he's been a nice little shining light for this team. Is this his coming out party for you?
Well, I mean, he's been a pretty solid player all year just for what they expect him to do. He's kind of that energy big. He's a different kind of player than Kevin Love is, who he's obviously replacing in the starting lineup. He's not really a long-range shooter, but, you know, he'll go, he'll dominate the glass, he'll, you know, make shots by the basket. He's, you know, he has his role, and he plays extremely well. The other guy that I think has done a terrific job for them, and especially in Game 4, is that I think arguably was their best player in that game, was Timofey Mozgov, with his rim protection and also his rebounding. And, you know, his ability to score around the basket. Their front court has been an excellent in this series.
Yeah, absolutely, this series. Last series against the Celtics, you know, Mozgov had his ups and downs. You know, didn't stop them from sweeping that lowly Celtics team. But it's nice to see him kind of, you know, figuring it out this second round, because they really need him, especially with the injuries to Love and obviously Kyrie not being 100%. Let's talk about Joakim Noah for a moment here, because he is painful to watch at times, and it's such a shame, because he was known for being one of the most fearless defensive bigs in the league. You know, what he did didn't really pass the eye test, so to speak, but he had tremendous, you know, analytics in terms of what he brings to a team. And I know he's not known for his offense, but how many more blown layups and blown putbacks can the Bulls suffer with him?
It's pretty frustrating watching Joe right now, because he's just so... he's so hobbled. He really hasn't been healthy all season. He had that knee surgery in the off season, and you know, he's been on a minutes limit all year. And the knee surgery that he had in the off season, like, they played it like it was a minor thing, but it seems like it's a little bit more serious than maybe they let on. And he's maybe still feeling the effects of that. He has some stretches where he looks really good physically, but it's, you know, and you know, in the first half of Game 4, he looked great. It was the best he's played all playoffs, and then he just kind of faded down the stretch. I just don't think, you know, physically he is where he needs to be. And he hasn't been for a while. Maybe this offseason he just lays low for a while and gets a lot of rest and then comes back next year stronger, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely something. And he's not the type of guy who's going to go around making excuses and, you know, saying he's hurt this. You know, it'll come out in the offseason when he has surgery or, you know, the team makes an announcement. But he's not the type of guy that let injuries or excuses hamper his game. So he's just going to go out there and give it his all. But I actually thought one of the smarter things that happened coaching-wise this series was in Game 3 when Tibbs removed Noah basically that whole, you know, last 9 minutes of the fourth quarter and basically went with Taj Gibson. It was giving him a lot more energy, giving him a little more on the offensive and defensive glass. Now, a couple last questions here on Cleveland before we jump around to some other series. David Blatt, if you had to grade his coaching, because it's widely talked about, especially after Game 4 where, you know, LeBron came out and said he changed the play. We obviously saw the Chris Webber-esque timeout when you had no timeouts, so thankfully the officials didn't catch it. Outside of Game 4, how would you assess his coaching so far in this postseason?
I think for the most part it's been fine. The thing I would question is the decision in the first game to replace Kevin Love by having Mike Miller start instead of Tristan Thompson. That seemed like that wasn't a great call, even at the time. You know, starting Mike Miller in 2015, he doesn't really have a lot left. But, you know, since he moved Tristan Thompson into the starting lineup, I also like that he kept him on Shumpert in the starting lineup after J.R. Smith came back from the suspension and brought J.R. off the bench. That's worked really well for them, and they've both been pretty successful in that series. I mean, I think he's done an okay job of coaching and making adjustments in this series. It's just, you know, all the stuff in Game 4 is just so ridiculous. It's just so, you know, the phantom timeout, I get it, like, that happens. But, the fact that, like, all the players were so open about the fact that originally LeBron was going to inbound the ball and then he overruled Blatt, like, that coming out after a game that they won, that just seems like, you know, that kind of shows you how the players all feel about him.
Right, right. And that's going to be, you know, scrutinized as they go on if they advance. And it's only going to get worse for David Blatt, unfortunately. And, it's you know, he's a fine coach. You know, he has credentials overseas. It's first, you know, NBA season. It's going to take some learning adjustment. So I'm with him. I'm not, you know, ready to write him off yet. He's doing an okay job. Now, the last comment on this series here is, how ironic for you is it that LeBron left Miami? We wanted to come home, but, you know, insiders believe that he didn't want to have to carry a team all over again. He went to a team in Cleveland where he got some young stars next to him. Yet, here we are. LeBron has to do it all himself again.
And this stuff happens. It's not like if he stayed in Miami, he would have not been carrying a team too. Because, I mean, Chris Bosh obviously had that health scare with the blood clots in his lungs, so he missed a lot of the year. And, you know, Dwayne Wade
right.
was kind of in and out of the lineup. So it's not like it would have been any different. Like, I think he wanted to come home to Cleveland and then, you know, he saw that there was more upside playing with a 21-year-old, Kyrie 21 or 22, a really young Kyrie Irving and a 25-year-old Kevin Love once that trade went down. Like, I totally get why he made the decision. But, yeah, I mean, this stuff just happens. Injuries happen. A lot of times, you know, Dwight Howard thought it was going to be a can't-miss when he went to the Lakers. And then, you know, guys got injured. Kobe got injured. He had the shoulders and back stuff that he was dealing with at the time. Like, this stuff happens. Like, you can't ever predict health.
You know, you're absolutely right. You cannot predict health. And speaking of predicting health, and you mentioned Dwight Howard, let's segue over to the series that I think most people agree with. This series is most likely over. Just the way the first four games have played out, the Clippers are putting up 100 points a game. You know, the last couple of games average 126 points a game. The Rockets struggled to even get to 100 points on the road in L.A. The Clippers have a 3-1 lead. First question to you is, Dwight Howard's not healthy, in my opinion, and if you are running the Houston organization, do you shut him down at this point, or do you still chart him out there in Game 5 or 6 or 7 if they get to that?
I don't think they're going to shut him down at this point. It's really interesting that he hasn't looked that healthy now, because he looked great in the first two games. He looked great in the first round against Dallas, but it's just kind of, you know, he's just kind of tailed off. But the Rockets have just been so decimated by injuries, not just Dwight, but, you know, Patrick Beverley being out, Giannis Motiejunas being out. There's just a lot that they've had to deal with. Maybe the series would have been different if some of those guys were healthy, but I just think the Clippers are flat out better than them at this point, and I think the series probably ends tonight.
Right, and I did a piece about Dwight Howard a long time ago, you know, in his heyday around 2010, where, you know, he was regarded as the best center, and rightfully so. And there was a couple of guys who could, you know, kind of put a stop to his game or match up well, and Hibbert was one of them who did a decent job defending him. Kendrick Perkins was always his kryptonite. Andrew Bynum was just good. And now we have the new guy, Mr. DeAndre Jordan, who is making basically Dwight look irrelevant in this series. And I think that says something to Dwight's ability to, you know, yeah, he dominated a twig of Tyson Chandler down in Dallas, and it's not like Dirk's going to be bodying anybody anytime soon. So I feel like he was favored to the matchup down there. But the problems for the Rockets go well beyond Dwight. I mean, he's struggling this series, and we saw the amount of free throw attempts he's taken and not making many of them. But my other focus is to James Harden. I don't feel like his style of play translates well into the postseason, that, you know, relying on getting to the line, you know, relying on, you know, the officials in a sense. It's the style of his game. What else do you see being the problem for the Rockets this postseason?
Well, I think you're right that James Harden has been less effective in the playoffs, mostly just because that, you know, the whistles are a little bit tighter. You know, he does a lot to get to the line in the regular season, and, you know, some of those calls tighten up in the playoffs. And, you know, you've got a guy who's really physical like Matt Barnes guarding him every night. I don't know. I just think the Clippers have played better. I think Chris Paul has been phenomenal since he came back from the hamstring injury that had him sitting out the first two games of the series. The other thing is J.J. Redick has just been lights out during this series. He's been shooting the ball incredibly well, and that's been kind of an X factor for them all season, just having that other offensive weapon besides Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. He's really showed up for them, so I've been really impressed with the way he's played.
Yeah, no, and to me, you know, the Rockets just don't defend enough. That, you know, and they're not known to mean defenders. We all make fun of James Harden, and we've seen the gifts, and, you know, we laugh at the comments he made coming into the season, how he's going to be a well-rounded player. But the reality is they're not a good defensive team, and without Patrick Beverley there to help, you know, be a pest to somebody, it's really hard for the Rockets to stop anybody. I mean, the Clippers are putting up astronomical numbers on them, and to me it starts on a defensive end for this team. So let me ask you this quick question. Do the Rockets win today and extend the series?
I think the Clippers finish it off, honestly. I think they've got all the momentum right now. I don't know what adjustments the Rockets are going to make. Chris Paul's been looking really good in the last two games he's played, so I think he's just going to keep looking better and better. Blake Griffin has been incredible. I'm expecting the Clippers to win it out tonight.
Yeah, same here. I wrote the Rockets off after game 3 and 4, where, you know, especially without game 1 and 2 with Chris Paul out, and, you know, still weren't able to do much with it. Let's jump to the other series in the Eastern Conference, which has been an exciting series despite not being, flashy in terms of the All-Stars names. You know, John Wall's not there. It's basically been the Paul Pierce and Bradley Beal show for the Wizards. The Hawks have had their ups and downs. This series has been close every game except for game 2, where the Hawks blew out the Wizards in game 2 at home. Are the Wizards for real in your eyes?
Yeah, they are. I think, you know, Paul Pierce has been great for them. Nene has kind of woken up. He was, you know, inconsistent during the regular season, but he's been good. Even without John Wall, I don't think they can, you know, make the finals and win the championship without John Wall, but I could absolutely see them beating the Hawks in this series. The Hawks haven't exactly done anything to make me think they're a lock to win this series. And the other thing is Otto Porter, who, you know, he hasn't really done much in his career up to this point. He's really had kind of a coming out party in the playoffs so far. I've been really impressed with the way he's been playing.
Yeah, you know, this Hawks team is just something different. To me, it's like, the games they lose, it's hard to really pin what went wrong for them, because they run such a great system. You know, obviously Budenholzer has a system from, you know, being in San Antonio for so long, and it's clearly working, as, you know, they don't really have that quote-unquote superstar, although Al Horford's a, you know, fantastic player. Jeff Teague's coming into his own. So let me ask you, who gets the last shot if you're the Atlanta Hawks at a tie ball game, last possession?
I don't know if there's one specific person that you point to. I think, you know, Kyle Korver is their best shooter, and if they can, you know, run him off a screen and get him open behind the three-point line, that's the look. Jeff Teague has made some big shots for them. You know, they've got options. I don't think they have one particular guy.
Yeah, and that's the beauty. See, to me, that's the beauty and the curse of the Atlanta Hawks, because we've all seen playoff basketball, and we always hear that superstars win championships. Outside of that Detroit Pistons team with Billups, and that team was stacked of all stars, but they didn't really have a quote unquote superstar. But every other team, in a sense, had that superstar, that one guy who you can kind of just get the ball to and get out of his way. Do you think that's necessarily a bad thing for the Hawks, or do you think it's more of a good thing that they don't have that?
I think it's a little bit overblown. Really, a lot of it is just that their system is so predicated on everybody being able to do what they're supposed to do. And if they have a couple of guys, like Paul Millsap's shoulder has been bothering him, Al Horford's finger has been bothering him, if they have those two things out of place, the kind of the whole thing unravels beyond that.
Right. It's definitely tough. And, so let me ask you in this series, because I think whoever wins the Bulls and Cavaliers series is eventually going to be representing the Eastern Conference. That's just my opinion. But out of this series, now a best of three, 2 games in Atlanta, 1 game in Washington, what is your expectation or prediction for the series?
I'm not sure. I still kind of give the edge to Atlanta. I just can't get past the idea of Washington winning 2 out of the next 3 games without John Wall. I mean, it was kind of a... And I don't know whether he's going to play or not. He's been apparently dribbling with that left hand, but if he doesn't play, then I can't really pick the Wizards to win anything.
Right, and you got to think that, you know, Paul Pierce is not going to be the best three-point shooter in the playoffs the rest of the way. You know, for him to continue holding that would be pretty absurd for the 37-year-old future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, but Pierce, I mean, he's been great so far, but, you know, it's just kind of, we wonder how sustainable it is.
Right, and then the one he missed was obviously probably the most important shot of that game. So let's jump to Randy Whitman here, who, you know, was torched all regular season long by Twitter and talking heads, and, you know, not a good coach, and he's holding them back, yada, yada, yada. Now we're in the playoffs, and it seems like Twitter is a beautiful thing. You know, they're never even-keeled. They're always to the extreme. Now we're calling him the greatest playoff coach of all time, and, you know, playoff Randy was trending, I believe, after a couple of games in that first-round series against the Raptors. What do you think goes into the hot and cold of, you know, the coaching staff and the system that the Hawks and the Wizards are now playing, where they're shooting way more threes, and they're just playing a different game in the postseason, including without John Wall?
The biggest thing that I think they've changed in the playoffs was they started to play Paul Pierce at power forward more, which was extremely effective against the Raptors in the first round, and it's been really effective too in the Hawks series. I don't know, I think maybe he just decided he wanted a different look, or you decide you want to switch it up during the playoffs. The thing is, the regular season is so long that a lot of times you can just kind of coast and you can keep stuff under your hat until you really need it, and I think that's kind of what Randy Whitman's been able to do here.
Right, and you know, Paul Pierce didn't play much down the stretch there. You know, they were kind of getting some people back healthy. It's definitely a different animal, and I just find it funny that in Paul Pierce's later years, his teams are just, you know, they limp into the playoffs, but once they're in there, you know, you cannot overlook a Paul Pierce playoff team. The guy just loves the playoff atmosphere, provided us plenty of great quotes this postseason, and, you know, for the sake of entertainment, I kind of hope the Wizards win, just because I think they'll be a little more exciting in terms of, you know, what they say to the media and what they tweet and all that good stuff. They just seem like a more fun group of guys to kind of follow as we go along in these playoffs here.
Yeah, I have to agree, Paul Pierce has just been wildly entertaining as a playoff personality. He's kind of in the same stage of his career that Kobe Bryant is. He's already said he's going to retire after next season, so he's just kind of saying whatever and talking trash and just, you know, really letting his feelings be known on everything. And as someone who doesn't really have a dog in that race, it's just been really entertaining to watch as an outsider.
Right, right. Let's jump to this last series here. We have probably the most interesting series, the one series to me that has become a chess match, and that is the number one seeded Golden State Warriors, who had a couple of hiccups in games 2 and 3 against the Memphis Grizzlies here, which we all know, first team all defense, Tony Allen has been very vocal to let us know that. It's to me, this is the must-watch series of the postseason, and I get it, the Warriors are the must-watch team all throughout the regular season, but it's funny here because Memphis was not the team to watch all regular season, you know, not the style of play that the league is kind of heading to. They still kind of, you know, rely on half-court offense and slowing the pace down. Obviously, the Grizzlies have exceeded most people's expectations so far, you know, but at the same time, are you worried that their losses have kind of been blowout losses?
Well, it's just, you have to give a lot of credit to the adjustments that Steve Kerr made last night for that win. And the other thing is that Steph Curry started knocking down shots. Like, you didn't think that he was going to shoot as badly as he did in games 2 and 3 for the entire rest of the series. And if he and Claire are hitting those shots, there's really not a lot you can do. I've been really impressed with the way that the Grizzlies have played in this series. You know, particularly Tony Allen, the way he's been able to lock down Klay Thompson. You know, Marcus Gasol has had a terrific series. Courtney Lee has really stepped up as a shot maker for them. I mean, it would surprise me if the Warriors lost this series, but it wouldn't shock me. I have to say Memphis has been playing extremely well.
Right, and the thing that you were discussing is, you know, putting Bogut on TA, which is not something out of the ordinary. You know, we've seen this in the past, and most notably to me was, you know, during those Celtic runs where they would basically not guard Rajon Rondo. They would just, you know, have somebody roaming the paint to help defend, you know, the bigs down there. And I feel like that's kind of what Steve Kerr is doing here, basically, you know, putting his best big defender on Tony Allen and say, don't worry about him, just protect the paint. But you're really guarding him since, you know, he's not allowed to just stand there. But you're guarding Tony Allen and you're watching the paint. So my question to you, Sean, is if you are on the Memphis Grizzlies coaching staff, what do you bring up or how do you counteract that move?
I'm not sure. I think it's really just going to be a chess match. I'm not really sure, you know, how exactly you counteract that move, because if you have they have Bogut on Tony Allen, you can't just say, no, please don't put Andrew Bogut on Tony Allen. I think you might just have to experiment with some different lineups. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a tough question because, I mean, we saw what the Grizzlies ended up doing. They ended up pulling Tony Allen and got him off the court, which, if you're the Grizzlies, your job is to find a way to keep him on the court for as long as possible, because you know he's not scoring. He's impacting the game in many different ways. And if he's not out there at least trying to slow down one of the two sharpshooters for the for the Warriors, I think he's going to be in trouble. So for the Warrior fans, it was nice to see a bounce back. It looks like the doubling with Bogut on the big men, making Gasol pass the ball out, and Zach Randolph to pass the ball out and let Memphis beat you on shooting, you know, threes and long twos, which is something that I don't think anybody expects him to be able to do against any of the playoff teams, you know, to hit enough shots from behind the arc to put that in. Unless Courtney Lee finds his early season shooting magic, I think it's going to be a long series for the Grizzlies unless they figure out how to counteract that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you really have to take the Grizzlies out of what they do offensively, and if they, you know, if they're going to beat you on three-pointers, you kind of live with that.
So let me ask you this. Two disappointing players in this series to me, and I just want to get your opinion on why that may be. Obviously, the first one is Draymond Green. You know, that was glaring in Game 2 and 3. He's just outsized down there. And the other guy disappointing on the other side of the ball for me is actually Jeff Green. You know, they went out midseason, got that trade for him. We've seen what he can do in his best. We also know he doesn't have that killer instinct, but, you know, he's playing 20 to 30 minutes a game, and he's only putting up, you know, 6 to 8 shots a game. And to me, that's just not enough for the role that I believe he's supposed to be filling in for.
Well, Jeff Green has been kind of inconsistent all basically ever since they made that trade with the Celtics. So I don't know. He's kind of been about how I expected. The Draymond Green thing, you know, considering he got all this most improved player buzz, the defensive player of the year buzz, yeah, he was just kind of outmanned in those two games. I still think he's really important for the Warriors going forward, but they've, you know, the Grizzlies have done a really good job of taking him out of the series.
So let me ask you, Sean, who do you got winning this best of three series now?
For the Warriors and Grizzlies?
And Grizzlies, yep.
I still am going to go with Golden State. I think they've made the adjustments they need to make. And, you know, if Steph Curry keeps hitting these shots that he was hitting last night, I feel like they're going to be pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, you know, when he's going, it's hard to beat. And it's unfortunate. It seems like he had a little bit of that MVP hangover. You know, I mean, you're given the league's best player award. And I know you still have to accomplish a title, but still, that moment where you get handed that award, you're probably thinking, you know, you've accomplished it all. And, you know, you kind of forget. You got to get back out there and play some more basketball games here. So, Sean, real quick, a couple quick hitters for you. Who do you see matching up in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I am going to guess that Chicago comes out of the Cavs series just because Cleveland is so banged up and they have so many question marks about their defense and other things. I think it's going to be Chicago and Atlanta.
Now, jumping into the Western Conference, I think we both agree it's going to be the Clippers, and I believe you said
yes.
You like the Warriors here. So out of the two conference finals, who, knowing what we know now, what are your NBA finals matchup?
I'm going to guess Chicago. I don't feel great about that one, but I think they've been, you know, if they have everybody healthy, if they get Pau Gasol back, I think they're, you know, a little bit better of a bet to play well than what we've seen out of the Hawks in this playoff so far. And then I think I'm going to go with the Warriors in the West, and I would pick the Warriors to win that series pretty easily.
Yeah, you know, that'd be one classic defense versus offense. And you know what's going to be the funny part is, if you are right, you're going to see Tom Thibodeau on a new team next year, most likely, with all the turmoil that we're hearing out there in Chicago. But that is another topic for another day. Sean, I can't thank you enough for stopping by. You're always a pleasure to chat with on Twitter, and keep up the hilarity and keeping Twitter light. I think people get a little too serious on there sometimes.
I do what I can. Thanks for having me on, Jacob.
Hey, my pleasure. Everybody, Sean Hyken, follow him. It's best Twitter handle out there, easiest one to have, at Hyken. That'll be it for us here. Take care, everybody.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.